At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And today on the show, we have Jamie Swick. Hey, Jamie.
Hi, Jamie.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Welcome, welcome. So, do you mind giving our listeners an introduction to who you are and how you got into photography?
Sure. Do you want me to go all the way back?
Let's go as far back.
Okay. All right. Well, I grew up in a really creative environment. I've known art like my whole life, and film cameras were always part of that. Like, I'm a product of the 80s, so yeah, I'm sure you guys like know, like an analog world is all that we had for 20 years. And I grew up with these really phenomenal people on my mom's side of the family. They're all artists and makers of some kind. So there was never a doubt about creativity being part of who you were. I was really into drawing back then when I was little. I wanted to become an animator for Disney.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That was really my goal, but my dad had a camera and he was always taking pictures of stuff. So I think subconsciously I sort of stored that away. Looking at my childhood memories, it's like I was always drawing or playing outside, doing something imaginative, and he always had a camera kind of keeping track of that. So I think it was the Minolta X700. I want to say that's
what
it was.
It's a great camera.
Yeah. He gave that to me when I was a little bit older. But I was maybe 14 when I first really started thinking like, oh, photography is really cool. My parents sent me to Australia when I was 14 without them.
Wow.
And bye.
Yeah, see ya. They were like, all right, have fun. Bring something cool back. But that was the first time I ever got the sense of wanderlust and what wanderlust can do to somebody when they have a camera. It was a really formative part of my life. And the reason, my understanding of the reason that they sent me is because a couple years before, I had been through this really dramatic physical trauma. I was crippled all of a sudden. I was in a wheelchair, almost died. It was really intense. And I, you know, as a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s, I was obsessed with National Geographic. And that's how I really learned how cool Australia looked. So I think that as their way of being like, oh, you know, you made it through, you got over this hump that was really difficult to overcome, why don't we kind of give you some of your childhood back?
Wow. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Do the special thing. I'm very fortunate to have had that as like a foundational point in my life and also sort of a turning point in my life. Because the way that you look at the world after you go through a trauma like that is something that's indescribable.
Yeah.
So to be given that gift of awe and hope again, and to be able to document that with film was so special. I was very fortunate to survive, but then even more so to be able to appreciate that.
Wow.
As a little kid.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, like approach things like a grown-up.
Right,
yeah.
Jeez.
That, for me, was the turning point to say, oh, travel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is cool. Want to do that. And I would really like to keep taking pictures. So in high school, I learned how to do foundational, like, black and white photography. We had art majors at my high school, even though it was public.
Oh, wow.
Not sure if that's still a thing.
Probably not, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was
going
to say,
I don't know how that system works anymore. My guess is that kids are like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was such a good way to learn who you were as a photographer at a really young age. And I had these two really wonderful teachers who, to this day, I credit for being kind of the guys who taught me to think and look around like an artist.
Wow.
So if they hear this, Eric Hotelling and Mike Kelly are like my two MVPs. They're
that.
The guys. I'd say the two of them really encouraged thinking outside the box of photography, not just like kind of traipsing around high school and taking pictures of just your friends, but to think beyond. One of them was really into negative space. That was a big thing for him. And I noticed today that even in the way that I make photos, I focus on that a lot. I'm not sure if I intend to, but it's there. So he did his job well.
I love when things like that stick. Like
when
you're taught something and it's just like, you know, kind of like subconsciously just there. Like it's something that you, oh, it's such a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, it was Eric Hotelling, actually. It was my art teacher, not just the photography teacher.
Ah, cool.
But he did everything. And I didn't pick up on noticing that pattern until about a year ago. But that being said, in high school, because I had wanted to go work for Disney, I wound up going to art school. They really pushed me going to do that. But when I got to, I went to Ringling School of Art and Design and talked to people at Disney and they were like, oh, you need to learn how to do computer animation. Everything's going to be on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to do that. And I truly at my core didn't want to.
Yeah.
I wound up switching schools and doing illustration and photography, moving across the country to California to do it. And that was way more my speed. So in the traditional practices of going to art school and learning the kind of basics and then being in a city environment that's big and crazy and really intense and overwhelming was a really interesting way to learn about art. I think, Chris, you went to art, or you went to photography school, right?
Yeah. We didn't really focus on the art aspect. It was more of a technical teaching of like photography and the process. I wish there was like some more like art related classes, but yeah, it was all basically just to learn how to, you know, tackle the technical side of it.
That's the part I wish I had paid more attention to. I'm such like a dreamy minded, like romantic, that if things don't kind of come naturally for me, I'm like, I don't want to pay attention to it. But at the same time, I see that skill and I see that, you know, that reverence for the way that these incredible tools work, and I admire it so much. But there's something for everybody.
Dude, I feel right there. I feel right there with you on that. I'm such like a kind of like a creature of habit kind of thing. Like even like picking up music and stuff again, I've been doing a lot of music writing and it's just like if something gets to the point where it's a little too technical out of my reach, I'm just like, move on to something else. That's not fun. I want to have fun. Like the point of this is fun, man.
Yeah.
Life
is short. Might as well do the stuff that's
exactly
going to make us really happy and, you know, really get your blood pumping along the way. So you know, I did the art school thing. I wound up moving back to the South Pacific for a year. I lived in New Zealand. And when my visa was up there, I moved to the Northwest. I had some friends who were from here, and I've been here ever since. So I'm going on like 15 years now. And when I got to the Northwest, it's kind of when I really started my instant film thing, whatever you want to call it. I hate the word journey. It's so overused, but it is kind of a journey.
It's a journey for sure.
There's
no
word for it. I'm assuming you're catching this travel thing, but the reason I wanted to travel so much is because of what happened when I was sick as a kid. I was really afraid of not living life well, and I had had the second chance to kind of make the most of it if I could, which meant that I was usually really poor and usually pretty excited to travel somewhere.
Right.
So I was on this trip. And I didn't have any cameras at all. I was in Hawaii. My ex-boyfriend and I, hi Matt, went on this awesome trip, and we camped around Hawaii for a month. And it was bonkers, and I don't have a single photo of it.
Yeah.
You know that feeling when you're like, oh, why did I do this to myself?
Right.
Yeah.
So when we got back, my kind of vow to myself was, if you're going to be doing this stuff, you know, it's not for anybody else, really. But if you're going to do it, take pictures of it, because you're going to want that later in life, no matter what age you are. It could be a year from now. It could be 10 years from now. And I was like, what's the easiest way to get this done? And I was like, oh, Polaroid. And that was right at the end of Polaroids, kind of, you know, crash and burn, heartache.
Yeah.
So I was scooping up as much film. It was $3 at the local grocery store in Portland.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Man, I love that.
Oh, I wish those days were still around.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, scooping it up left and right. And then I discovered Instax film. So I kind of went on like an Instax binge. But back then, you could buy pack film for super cheap, and that was sort of my, like, drug of choice, where I was just, like, peeling left and right. And just having the time of my life with these $5 thrift store cameras that required, like, nothing. So that is when I was really... That was 2009, the beginning of 2010. So this has been sort of a 10, 11-year, like, love affair of instant film, and I've slowly sort of created this world where I see in Polaroid film only now. That's how I look at things. But along the way, I've amassed thousands of photographs that I just have adored no matter what brand it was. So I hope if anybody's listening and they're like, which one's better? They're all good.
Yeah.
They are.
They all have their own thing, you know? There's something for everybody with instant film, but my personal preference is that the dreamlike quality that Polaroid film makes, especially now, is something that you can't get anywhere else. And it is an obsession. I can't describe it any other way.
Dude, I totally get that.
Yeah.
The obsession is thriving in my little... I wish I could take my camera off and show you the... summer of 2020 was like, I am hoarding as much Polaroid film as I possibly can. Like, I went crazy.
You were like, I just dropped $300 on Polaroid. I was like, what?
And that was that week. I was just like, I was just like, I don't... I mean, you know, when you have, like you said, you see in Polaroid, you know, like you see, you know what that vision is. And I do too. Like, I love instant photography. I just feel like it's such a part of my, like, there's always one in my bag. Even though it was 31 degrees out today, I still shot one SX70 shot, shoved it in my pocket, zipped up my sweatshirt, buttoned my jacket, and kept my arms crossed while I walked home, because I, you know, it's just what we do, because that's how special that film. Oh, it was great. It was it's just a building, like another building shot.
It looks great though. Black and white or is it color?
It's black and white. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that new film is good.
I've got to get back into black and white Polaroid, cuz I don't know, for a while I thought it was like too faded. Like, it didn't have any oomph to
their
it.
Their new stuff is just so punchy. Like, it's just...
It's gorgeous.
It is. It almost has, like, a large format, wet plate-ish kind of look to it.
Yeah.
Like, I always felt like... Because I was just having this conversation with my stepdad, because he was like, you know, I've tried. I've tried the 600 cameras. I've tried this. I've tried Instax. And he just doesn't click with it. Mm. And I'm like, you need to just... I was like, I have four of them. I have four SX70s. Just come down.
Yeah.
Grab one. And just, I got plenty of film, grab a couple packs and just go have a moment with it. Like, I feel like the now Polaroid film is a little tougher on the 600 aspect of things, like to just kind of point and shoot. Like, I've always had problems with that. Like, I need an SX70 and I need to either shoot the SX70 film or I don't know. I just always have better luck with the lower ISO stuff. I don't know what my beef is with 600. I'll shoot it, but I don't know. I just love it.
It's
love
it. It's a different beast, though. You're right about
it is.
That.
It is.
It's a different, I don't know. It's got a crisper, I mean, usually like 160 is a pretty beautiful film across the board, like Portra 400 versus 160 is like night and day as far as I'm concerned. But with Polaroid, I feel like you really see it. And people are dedicated to just shooting SX70, and I see why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I realized I only had like two packs left, so I bought, you know, they offer it's like 1, 3, or 5 on the Polaroid website. So I was like, you know what? I'm getting 10. Like, I'm going for it. Because the SX70 color film, you know, we had Shelby Diamond on the show forever ago, and she does a lot of Polaroid stuff. And she said it when we were recording with her that film is just different. The SX70 film is just different. And I never really thought of it until then. And now I see it. The colors, I just feel like the colors pop so much more. And I guess it's probably just, I mean, mentally, it's like grain is less in a lower ISO film. So maybe that's, I don't know. But it just hits different. It's so beautiful. It's all I want to shoot.
Just the other night, I was going down like an SX70 hashtag rabbit hole because...
Oh, that's fun.
I mean, you guys probably know how that is. I'm sure people listening know what that is. I was like, I have three SX70s, all of which are broken right now. One of them produces like really dreamy pink colors, so I'm not changing that on purpose currently. Yeah. But I was always stuffing it with 600 film, with film in the ND filter, and I was like, ugh. These pictures look so much cooler. Like, the color is just so much prettier. It's just pretty. I don't know a better way to describe it other than that. And it's cool when there's, like, an older person who sees me out and about, and they're like, I have that camera in my basement, and, you know, I haven't touched it in 40 years or whatever. No, you can't find film
for
that.
Can I have it?
Yeah, right. I think about that constantly.
Can I have it?
Just this morning, actually, I was out taking pictures of a cow. And this old guy cruised up behind me, and there's all these ducks where I live. And he was like, are you a birder? And I was like, yeah, I'm a birder. He goes, are you a birder with Polaroid? And I was like, uh-huh. He goes, oh, those are obsolete. And I was like, well, actually, they have film again, and it's really beautiful. And he's like, I haven't touched mine. And I was like, I got to write this guy's license plate down because I need to contact him.
You're like, what's your phone number? I'll come get it.
So maybe that guy's out there, and... I'll magically get whatever collection he's hiding.
I love that. I love saying to people that, you know, oh, you could still get film for that. I mean, especially people say that a lot with every camera, but when they see an SX70, it's either like I had one of those, my grandparents had one of those, and I'm just like, here, I always just shove it in their face, and I'm like, look at it, hold it, like, feel it, because you're going to want to get it out. You know?
That's what I want people to want to do. I want people to... Mm-hmm. See that and go, what is it? Even if they've never seen it before, because it's a totally different experience and everyone is excited. Like, across the board, universally, Polaroid does something to people that no other camera, I think, does.
Yeah.
It makes people feel nostalgic, and it's a very sweet sensation.
Yeah, I always feel very grateful that the people that came together to create Impossible Project, we owe them so much.
Oh yeah,
we owe them so much as a community, because can you imagine if these beautiful cameras were just useless, you know,
like shelf pieces,
shelf
queens.
Yeah.
Oof, just makes me like, ugh, I don't want to live in that reality.
I can't imagine a world without it. And I know some people could hear that and think like, oh please, it's just a camera, but it's a tool that you use to create. It's something that is like another limb for me, and I know a lot of other people out there who feel as fondly as I do for them. And I hope that the best success comes to Polaroid and everybody over there now, and everybody
who's
trying to keep things like SuperSense, like keeping pack film kicking.
Yep.
So
yeah,
I'm gonna keep hoarding film probably for as long as I'm alive.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah,
but in the meantime.
Yeah, so do you have like what's your process? Do you have a bunch of cameras that you use, or do you have one and that's it?
I have a lot of cameras. So
cool.
I started with, you know, like the reporter was the one that I started with.
Oh.
for pack film, and I've kept that around for a long time. I've got a lot of land cameras, but currently, I guess in like the pandemic year of photography, my go-to has just been the SX70 and my SLR680, but I have a closet in the hallway here that's just like a whole shelf just of cameras, and I'm like, I have an idea for you, and you,
ooh,
and you.
But,
and with all that hoarded film, I also have ideas in the back of my mind about how I could make everything come to life. But that's another story for another day, I think. I live very rurally. I live on the coast of Oregon, and it takes about 20 minutes for me to get down to the water. But along the way is a really beautiful drive. And getting from, you know, home to where I'm trying to go for the day usually involves just kind of very slowly driving around rural roads and looking around. I spend a lot of time going slow and just looking. And thankfully out here, atmospheric conditions vary very quickly. And I think that that's probably the best asset that I have in the way that I approach things. If I know there's going to be a ton of fog, I'm out the door. If I know there's going to be a break in the clouds, I want to be outside somewhere. And I don't have a particular approach other than I know the locations where the rise in elevation causes crazy effects with the sky. And that's a big, that's a really big influence for me to kind of go out and just keep my eyes peeled.
I love it.
And then just, I don't know, keeping myself engaged by trying not to get bored of what I'm doing in the same places over and over and over again is something I've had to add to that sort of, I don't know, approach. I guess you could just call it an approach. Like leaving the house, not setting myself in stone has been super helpful because when I do that, I get really upset and I don't take very good photos. And leaving myself open to be like, what happens if we go this way today? And that's been the one blessing of like the pandemic is that I've had time to do that. And I've been afforded the opportunity to build that skill really well.
I was going to say what you said about like going the other way is like such an important thing because I, you know, I've always, I get stuck in my head and be like, well, I can't go that way because I don't know where it goes. Or like, you know, just getting out of your own way is like a huge thing. Like, just go the other way and see where that leads. You know what I mean?
Yes. You said it perfectly. Getting out of your own way. It's so easy to just be stuck in a habit or to think like, oh, it won't be worth it. Or it's going to, there's going to be X, Y, or Z outcome. And usually those are in our imagination.
Yep.
And those things wind up missing all sorts of wonderful things that could happen. Just this morning, I was like, ugh, I don't want to do this. What am I doing? It's cold, but the sun is going to come out. And I took like 20 pictures and they all came out great. If I had just not, or if I had listened to myself in that way.
Yeah.
I would have been really disappointed. And I saw a ton of animals and it was really lovely.
I think of that every day when I try to take a daily walk, you know, and even if it's just 30 minutes down to get a cup of coffee from the convenience store and walk back. And I almost had myself convinced today that I didn't need to. And then I thought about it. I was like, man, yesterday I had one of those days where it was just like, I could have taken 30 shots. I probably did of the same stuff that I always shoot, but it was just like the music was right that I was listening to. It wasn't absolutely freezing and the sun broke, the clouds were moody, you know. I was just, it's just crazy like how it all just changes, you know, if you just kind of let go and let yourself. I remember, Chris, you were just not too long ago, I don't know if it was when you got your Leica or maybe it was before that, you were just like, I don't want to shoot palm trees. I want to do something different. Or so, I forget what we were talking about. And I was just like, damn it, just go. Like, just go but and do.
I will photograph palm trees forever.
Yeah. I think LA is like the palm trees are like to like Northwest fog photos where I'm like, I just can't get enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, it comes to a point where you're like, all right, I have this palm tree, I feel like. Find another palm tree. Yeah. Maybe I'll do a zine on just palm trees.
You should. That would be awesome. I would love
Please do. I'm a big fan of like solo ideas, like a monograph for zines and books. So
yeah. Ooh, okay. My wheels are turning now.
Even when I, looking back from my photos from when I came to LA and visited and stuff like that, I had 57 palm tree pictures. And yeah, like a lot of them were like three of the same batch of palm trees. And it was like, because it's me, it was in black and white. So it was just like, why? But now I look back at those, just like kind of to round about what you were saying at the beginning about, you know, not you wish you would have had a camera. It's like, damn, those are memories, even though they're not ever going to be award winning photographs. They're just like, they mean something to me, you know? Like,
I was listening to a conversation on Clubhouse, and it was somebody who was fairly new to photography, I think, in general. But I thought of you, Timothy, because he was a musician who went on tour, and he was like, I have no photos of it because I just wasn't into photography. I didn't even, like, if I can go back in time, you know, and I was like, oh, that's rough.
That's my biggest regret. I mean, I did that for like 98 to 2008 or something like that, or 2007. Wow. I have three shows on VHS, and they're like mediocre, not even good shows. Zero pictures. Some pictures that were given to me that like mean a lot to me, that but I didn't take them.
Yeah,
can you
yeah.
imagine?
That's like, what he said. He's like, he has some pictures because somebody else had took them, but he's like, I didn't document it. And I was like,
I just wish I would have been in that headspace then. Yeah. Like, I wish I had, just hearing like Jamie's story of like school and art and it being like I didn't have that. And like, it bums me out because I've always wanted to be that guy that was like, went to art school and did this and did that. And I wish I could be more poetic with my art, you know, I wish I had the words to express what I'm feeling, but I don't. So I do the best I can with twiddling on a guitar and pushing a button, you know, and that's the best I can do. And it really satisfies that itch, but I always wish I was like more romantic with it. Like I had the words, like, I don't know. I don't know why I'm crying right now.
There's a lot of crossover, I think, between like the, so I grew up as like a punk kid, and I think a lot of people today would be like, really? But I understand that world really well. A lot of my friends were in bands or like tour managers, and everyone I've talked to as an adult is like, man, if we just had more pictures, and not just from other people, but for themselves. So if there's any young musicians listening wanting to travel in like a post-coronavirus world, bring a camera. It's going to make you really psyched.
You can use your phone. But bring a camera.
Yeah.
Or hire your best friend that you know is like completely obsessed.
Bring somebody
with
on tour. Yeah.
Because that's what I was going to say when we were talking about that, is that I saw one of my favorite bands, and 2 days after we saw them, they posted on Instagram, or maybe they were on a podcast or something like that. I forget, but they were basically like, we would love to document like one of these lengths of our tour. And I remember this is right before Corona and all that stuff happened. And I was like, I will do it for free.
Yeah,
like, I love you
feed
guys.
Me.
Like,
just feed
just,
me.
Yeah. No, just give me a seat. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall for these guys, because I've just looked up to him forever. And I just remember, like, he liked it. And I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm going.
I'm on tour.
Yeah. But that's when this whole thing settles down, that's definitely something I kind of like, how, not to put myself in your situation at all, but I had like a health scare at the beginning of the year, and I'm kind of at that stage where I was like, I'm ready to live. And then it's like, we can't go outside.
It's so unfortunate, Timothy, because it was like literally right before.
Right before.
So you like got better, and then they're like, oh, go in your house.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. Yeah. I'm trying to keep that flame lit. I keep like putting my hands over it so the wind doesn't blow it out.
we'll get there, and you'll be so happy to get out there and make photos and see different stuff. I think people are going to rejoice whenever the day comes.
Oh, it's
going to
be,
it's going to
be
years,
something else.
We're going to be psyched.
Definitely.
So, Jamie, are you strictly Polaroid now? Is that your medium, or do you do like 35 or anything else?
I do shoot a little bit of everything. I just don't really share it very much anymore. So with Polaroid, I found that I feel like myself with it. Like I know myself with these tools and with this film, which has taken a lot of effort and a lot of money. And I love that when I invest myself into it, I get a reward back. And it's lucky that it's just something that's takes 15 minutes to an hour for me to tell. But
yeah.
But I still really love to bring my Instax cameras around, and I have Nikon, or not Nikon, what am I saying? I've never owned a Nikon. Oh, a Canon EOS 1V.
Oh, that's a great camera.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love that I can have so many great lenses available to me, mm-hmm. and for you know, a pretty affordable price, get some film developed from that. But I don't find myself gravitating toward it as much. I'm not sure if that's just because the last year has been such a struggle to like feel mm-hmm. motivated, and it was yeah. just a habit to pick up my Polaroid. But when I leave the house, I usually have like 7 cameras with me.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes forever to leave the house.
Ditto.
Yeah, I feel Man. Like the instant gratification probably was the motivation for that. I've been going to like a 1 hour lab because I'm like, I just want my happiness now. Like, I don't want to wait. So I get that, like grabbing the Polaroid, because you can be like, ah.
Moving out to the country too has changed my relationship with my 35, because in Portland, I could just walk down the street and probably get it within the next day or two. And now I have to like either drive it back to Portland, or I have to mail it, wait for them to be mm-hmm. uploaded, and then go get my negatives. And there's more of a process to it that I find myself reluctant to participate in. And I actually just mailed them yesterday, like 7 rolls of film from 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, how embarrassing. Like,
ooh, I bet that'll be fun to see what's on it, though.
Well, you know, the funniest part is like, I know where they're from. We were in Mexico for an art residency at the end of 2019, and it's like all the pictures. How could I be at an art residency and not get my film developed? It's an embarrassment. So I'm very excited to see them, though.
I know. I've been holding off. Thankfully, now we develop once a month with our Patreons and stuff, and it's... Mm-hmm. At least I have that, because I'm so behind. Like, I think I've turned into... I used to shoot for the final product because, like, I loved the developing process and I loved getting the image and going through them all and then going through them again and finding more pictures out of it. And now I've just turned into, like, a button pusher fiend. Like, I just love, like, oh, I gotta get. And then...
That's so crazy to me, because I'll finish a roll and drive right to the lab.
Dude, I have stuff sitting from... I probably knock off like 3 or 6 every time. I have so many rolls from living in Franklin still that just haven't been developed. One, it kind of hurts a little bit to see them because I miss it. And two, you know, I keep jumping ahead to the newer stuff. Like, I know there's a mm-hmm. shot on there. I have a roll sitting right behind me, and I'm like, there is a money shot on that, and I need to see it. And I'm going to skip the 50 that are in there that need to be. Because when I got my Leica, man, I was shooting a roll and a half.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today, we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
At least a roll a day. Oh, like, wow. I was just going out and hitting the pavement and going and going and going. And now I think I'm more into composing and pulling the trigger rather than the file. I don't know
that's
when
so
that switched.
There has to be
but
a word
I used to
for
be
that.
All about what's that?
Oh, I said there has to be a word for that. Like some some like beautiful like Norwegian or German word that means like the urge to make the photograph that you can't deny.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sure there is. I wish we had a translator or something.
If there isn't one, we should really hop on that. I think we could do a lot for the world.
But it kind of reminds me of like, you know, I hate to talk about Vivian Mayer again on the show because everybody knows I'm a fangirl. But
that's
she,
all right.
She did the same thing. Essentially, she shot all this work, didn't develop it. They found like tons and tons and tons of roles undeveloped.
That's like a gold mine.
Oh, I know.
Can't even imagine
literally
how cool that would feel to like be like, oh, I'm going to develop it now.
Yeah, right. Whoever job that is, like,
Right?
Man, I don't know. There is something about, like, waiting to see it, though. Like, I do appreciate these times of taking it slower and waiting. I'm not years yet. I haven't gotten to the years point, but I don't know. There's just something like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember what I was thinking when I was doing that, like kind of thing that I never felt before because it was always a rush. And it's funny because I preach about shooting film. It's just like everybody needs to shoot film. And here I am basically shooting a roll, developing a roll, scanning it, uploading it. It's like, why would I even shoot film if I don't want to enjoy the process of it. So I've kind of just really tried to slow down on that end of things.
Just this morning, I was thinking that exact thing, actually, and kind of to tie back to Chris's question about other types of film that I use. I noticed that I was getting really eager to just be like, there's one roll and another, and I was like, I could just use my cell phone if I'm not going to be, if I'm not going to like actually invest my time to get it developed and see what came of it because I was so excited to make it in the first place. What am I doing? What do I need to change here to make this feel more like it is an exciting process through and through? And I think that is a kind of almost like a deterrent now that I'm like, oh, I developed sort of a bad habit for myself because I would lose rolls of film too, which is maybe one of the worst things that a person could do after you spend so much time and money on it and like the emotional part of it too. But there is something to be said about getting film back, you know, whether it's weeks or months, in my case, maybe years, and being transported back to that moment. And that to me is something you really don't get with digital. That's like the most special, transcendent thing about this approach to making photography happen that is so beautiful. I think that's what keeps a lot of people going too.
Yeah. It's like the mystery almost.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I'm such like a grandpa with a digital camera or my cell phone now too. Like, I'm like, how does this thing work? I'm like the guy that's like, I cannot take a good picture for the life of me with my iPhone. And I don't, not that it's not capable of it. I just, my brain forgets that, you know, I zoom with my feet and like, if it doesn't fit in the frame, I need to back up. Like for some reason, when I'm holding my iPhone, just the other night when it was snowing, I was like, oh, this is gorgeous. I'm going to take an iPhone photo. And I was like, I cannot, I don't understand. Like if I had my, you know, RB67 or, you know, something, it would be a whole heck of a lot easier. I don't know why. I don't know. I think I broke that part of my brain somehow.
I remember when digital photography was starting to be a thing. I was still in high school. Maybe it was after high school. But remember how people, when you held your phone like that, Timothy, it's reminding me like digital photography was like this.
Yeah.
Cause it still is. People would hold it away from their eye. And that to me was so such a foreign concept. And I was like, I will never do digital. LOL. I totally did. But I was just like, why are they holding a camera like that? How could anybody do that? You know?
Yeah. It's so weird. Yeah. I feel that way with the ZV-1 too, like the same like vlogging camera that we have.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to the RX100, I think is what they're called. They have a like an EV electrical viewfinder, EVF, that's what they're called. And I could still put it up to my eye.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the ZV-1, you don't have that option. So it's just like it feels weird to shoot like that. I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
I went into a camera store once years ago. I don't remember what I looked at because I've never been a digital person. I'm such a purist and I was so cheap that I was like, well, I'm just going to use film cameras. But I went into this really nice place in Portland and I picked up some camera and actually held it up to my eye. And the guy was like, oh, you shoot film. I thought that was so interesting because I had never really stopped and paid attention to the fact that so many people are looking around with just this wacky screen in front of them and mm-hmm. that it changes the relationship in the body. And I sort of wonder how mm-hmm. that transition works for people. I don't know. I'm so interested in like the emotional intimacy of having a film camera. You're either looking down through it or, you know, right. holding it up so close. And there's sort of this detachment with the digital realm that makes me wonder about how people treat photography outside of it when they have that kind of physical detachment, even if it's at the end of your arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I know, too, I'm guilty of it when shooting like random street photography stuff. And I'll kind of zone focus the lens. Like if I know they're about a foot and a half, 2 feet away, I'll do that. And I'll try to do the no look, like no attention towards me. I'm taking mm-hmm. a picture of the mm-hmm. kid crying and yeah. kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's just that whole, and I always feel so not like weird or guilty for doing it. It just is an unnatural motion mm-hmm. of like swooping your camera without bringing it up and looking mm-hmm. at it type thing. That's weird. Yeah. And usually those photos never work out. I probably have about two. It's like I got their feet or the top of their head or something. You know, it just doesn't work.
Sometimes you got to fire it off because you're just like, yeah. if I get it, I get yeah. it. If not, I tried, you know.
Yeah. I have one last note on that. I have a really good photo. I'll have to maybe put it on our Instagram stories once this comes out of I did that. There's an old man walking with a cane with a big dog, and the guy next to him saw me bring the camera up to like quick snap, and his middle finger is like up in the air. Like and I caught it right at the point where the guy's like you're a dick for taking that picture. And I was like, I didn't even see the whole thing happen. And years later, I'm like looking back at the photos and I'm like, he's flicking me off. Like, that's amazing.
That's
love
great.
That.
That's
yeah.
sort of a dream.
Yeah, that's the thing about street photography I have to get better at. Just being like, pop, and then be like, bye, and just keep walking and be like, he's mad. I don't care.
I don't know how people do it.
I don't know either.
I mean, I love doing it. I ran around Franklin for, you know, 7 or 8 years doing it. And it's like, I think of that now, like when things start opening back up again and I can be around people mm-hmm. and do that, it's going to be a minute until I get my...
It's a little rusty. You'll get it back.
Man. Jamie, I wanted to ask you one last thing. Well, not one last thing, but I wanted to ask you, is there any sort of end goal with all of your Polaroid work? Because I love looking at your Instagram.
Yes,
it's,
same.
It's gorgeous. Do you have any like book ideas? You trying to do any sort of...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. of course, yeah. Of course.
So I have a book that I just finished making. I've self-published it because it was such an intense... Personally, it was a really intense project. So when I was down at the art residency in Mexico, I had this whole idea. It actually touches on the whole, you know, kind of street photography thing, but... I had this whole idea about what I was going to make down there, and it was a total disaster. The time I spent in Mexico was a very tumultuous experience. I'm really happy that I went there and I learned a lot of lessons about photographing because I didn't get to photograph what I wanted. And what I did do is collect all these photographs of what I didn't intend to to go find. So wow. My first book should be here in my hands on Friday. I'm really hoping.
Ooh.
I'm really excited. It was a serious labor of love to make this thing. I think it's turned out really beautifully. The colors are really vibrant. You know, it's Mexico and it's colors everywhere. And it was so incredibly hot and bright that I couldn't not make photos while I was there. So the photos that I made are my first collection. And that's going to be my first book. But ultimately, I'd like to keep making books. I think that's one of the best ways to interact with photography. If you're not actually making it yourself or at, you know, a gallery or at a museum, you get to hold this really intimate object in your hand that has a lot of intention behind it. And it's probably one of my favorite things to spend money on is like the people I admire the most making books, whether they're older or newer.
Same here. Yeah.
So I don't know what my next collection will be, but there's a lot of kind of projects in the back of my mind that I just need to be able to travel to create. And I'm really interested in the desert as sort of a duality with the way that I live by the sea. And like on my website, I just have like the sea and the desert. And I only have a few desert photos from a couple years ago now, But I'd like to go back there. I have a ton of FP100C film, and all this expired 669. And I want to take those down there and make a book just about that. So, fingers crossed. In the long run, like, I do sell prints, and I think that's a really rewarding way to feel like I've kind of, like, done it for myself. I've put in the hard work, and people appreciate it. And it just, like, it puts me over the moon when somebody's like, can I have a print of that? Because it's this recognition that there's something ethereal that other people really appreciate about being alive that it's something I can capture and share with them. It's such an honor to know that my art can go to other people's homes, or that the books that I'm making are going to go to people's homes and around the world. So I'm not sure what to do beyond books and prints. I'd love to own my own gallery someday. I think that would be a real blast.
Yeah, that's a dream.
Maybe one of the coolest outcomes of like being an instant photographer is just having some kind of instant photography gallery. Who knows if that's possible? I don't know if... I think I might live in the wrong rural town. So...
I know. It's like there's, because of the, I mean, this is kind of sad. I don't want to end on a sad note, but like a lot of spots in LA that were like little shops are all closed now. And right on Sunset, when I look at them, I'm like, this would be a great gallery space. This would be a great little lab space. So it could, you know, I hope that out of all this sadness, people will be able to bring art and stuff like that into the world, because there's so many spaces, and hopefully will be opportunities once this thing goes away.
I hope so. I think the one thing that's really carried me in the last year is like I've been so overwhelmed by not only the support that people are showing needing art, needing photography, realizing like photography in particular, like you don't have to be an artist to be a photographer, and it's not vice versa in any way, but like if you want to make photos of what's around you because you're recognizing that life is very fleeting, and there's something to be said about having a tangible object to remember something or someone by, that it's so many people are like that's at the forefront of their minds. And it gives me so much hope when I hear that, you know, when people are like, oh, I bought a Polaroid because I saw you were out shooting your Polaroids and and I like, you know, took one of my grandma and my girlfriend and whoever and my dog. And, you know, you look back 20 years down the line and like, that is the most precious gift that you can give yourself. And if the pandemic is something that's causing people to think that way, that's maybe one of the best possible things that could have happened to humanity.
Right.
It fills me with a lot of love to know that that is important to people. And I hope that with that kind of energy, they can turn it towards recognizing that there's value in this beyond just taking it at home or taking a hike or going on a walk. And that art does have a place in society and as part of the human experience. And it's worth celebrating.
So well said. Holy smokes. That's great.
That was really good. Yeah.
We'll be right back with some listener questions for Jamie right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk comes from Polaroid. Use the promo code ANALOGTALK10 on your first purchase on film at Polaroid.com.
Just wanted to pop in and remind you guys about our Developing With Us. It is a Patreon-only exclusive. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of other stuff over there. Check it out, and we'll catch you at the end of the show.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we take a question from, well, we're going to do two of our listeners this time for Jamie. This question comes from TJ Armstrong, and they ask, what is your process on how you scan your Polaroids? Do you use a flatbed scanner?
This is a very frequently asked question. I need to put something on the internet to help people, I think. But I'm looking at it right now. It's the flatbed Epson V500. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, a phenomenal art scanning and photograph scanning tool. It can be a little bit pricey up front, but I do think it pays itself off if you're using it frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely. When I scan in two different ways. I'll scan JPEGs and I'll scan a TIFF, and I'll scan in at 300 DPI because that's how I like to upload things to the internet, and then 600 if I'm thinking about maybe printing something down the line. If I have a photo that I really fall in love with that I'd like to print for myself, I usually will do 1200. I don't think that's necessary. Most printers, like online printers, for instance, if you're not going through a really good shop, will take like a 300 or 600 DPI image and it'll look great. But I scan in. I don't use the Epson software because it's an older model and I couldn't find it for my new computer. So I just use image capture on my MacBook Pro. And it's a great alternative. Mm-hmm, yeah. I find it actually, for me, is a little bit better than the old scanning software that I had from Epson. And I just scan them straight. I don't actually edit anything. I'll bring them into Photoshop and I'll crop them down. Occasionally, usually when I put them in, I don't use a scanning adapter. Place them down on the glass and kind of let them get in there. They get all wonky. So I usually have to rotate and then crop and then we're good to go. From time to time, I do notice that I need to brighten with the frame because it can look a little bit muddy. And I think that's because the scanner is a little bit on the older side. But otherwise, they're straight out of the camera and straight out of the scanner.
It's cool.
Yeah, they're a good size too. It's you can really get the detail out of it when you scan them.
It's always so tempting to like brighten them up if they're a little underexposed. I was like, make it just look a little
better.
People
want to do that. Like, people should. It's like, what makes you feel good?
I know.
Like, if you're gonna feel like really psyched that your photo benefits from a boost of brightness or contrast, I think people should. And like, I might be an analog purist,
definitely.
But I think what makes you feel proud of that work is what's going to speak for itself. So go for it.
Love that. Yeah.
Good answer.
Yep.
All right, we got one more for you. This one comes from subtropical_trash, and he wanted to know, how might your style/approach change if you lived in a more urban/city environment?
I knew he was going to ask a question, and I didn't know it was going to be this tough, because that is a tough question. I lived in an urban area. I lived in Portland for about 14 years, and in college, I was in San Francisco, which I recently unearthed the Polaroids from. They were all Spectra, and they look like garbage. I was not good at it. I was taking a lot of pictures of cement. I think it would be a challenge for me to go into a city now after really feeling like I've gotten my feet wet and I'm doing a good job working in a natural landscape. But I do really appreciate architecture. That's something I don't know a lot about. But around here, like, the West Coast doesn't have as much stuff that I find as appealing as... I'm from back east. I don't think it's quite as appealing as some of the architecture you could find in other really beautiful cities, but that's not a deterrent from wanting to capture like the angles and the sort of the chaos and the energy that comes with that. I think I might be more interested in photographing people in an urban environment, which is something I don't like to photograph. I'm not a big fan of that, but in a city environment, I think there's sort of there's a hum that comes from being around complete strangers and being totally anonymous. That sort of warrants this thought process of being like, well, I can snap that. Nobody's going to be bummed and it'll kind of be my little slice of secrecy. And that's one thing I do admire about people who enjoy working in cities and in urban places or suburban places in particular. Fascinating to me. I think that's a really, really interesting, subgenre of photography that's kind of popular right now.
Yeah.
But that being said, I also think that if I was in an urban area, I would use a lot more black and white film. And the person who asked this is a great example of somebody who loves to use black and white film, and it's really inspiring for me because I see atmospheric change in color, and you can't capture that quite as well around, at least not in the Northwest, because our skies are so diffused that like everything kind of gets flat, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good question. I'm going to think about this for a while.
Yeah.
I'm going to need to like go to town and try it out and just see what happens. Might be a lot of pigeon photos.
Yes. Yes. Gotta love the pigeons.
Great answer. Great question. But now we have even harder questions. Should I ask it?
Please do.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had to pick one camera, your desert island camera, that you can only use one for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
So I knew you were going to ask this because I listened to your show. And I was like, man, what camera would it be? And I thought about it for like 3 days straight. I'm not lying. Because I was like, man, there's so many advantages of this and this and this. And I was like, it's going to be the SLR 680. I was like, oh, it could be my EOS 1V or my Olympus Stylus Epic, because that's my like favorite kind of pick up and go camera. But at the end of the day, I'd be most satisfied with the Polaroid. It's the perfect tool.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if you didn't pick a Polaroid.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
like, wait a second.
Intrepid one, 8x10. There was actually a...
I still need a 680. Oh, that's one I need.
I've only had it for a year. The SX70s were in my family for a long time, and I've acquired a few, but the 680, it's totally changed things for me. I feel like it's just, you can feel the like depth of care that was put into building those. So if anybody's on the fence, if you're on the fence and you really think you want one, keep your eyes peeled because they're out there for really cheap. There's one for $25 on eBay the other day and somebody bought it.
Of course.
I haven't looked in a while. I
was gonna say, what are they going for?
Oh boy, a lot. Like,
yeah, yeah. A lot.
Are they like in the 500s or
500 plus? For some reason, Polaroid had one with the fragment like etching on it for $1,700.
What?
I know. I'm not sure if it was like plated in gold or like whale teeth or something. Edge. But
if I ever won the lottery, I would buy all of the cameras. Mm-hmm. You know, like everything that there ever is.
Same.
Just to like look at that price tag and be like, yeah. Boop. I can do that.
No big deal.
But it's true. If you look on eBay every once in a while, you'll find one that'll pop up that's like untested, da 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 da, for like $200 or something. But
that untested, oof, dangerous.
It is. Yeah. That's a slippery slope sometimes.
Because to me, I feel like they say untested because they know it's broken.
Yeah,
right?
They know something's up.
Yeah.
It's always like, we don't have film to test it. It's like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
No. Well, Jamie, this has been awesome.
Oh, we didn't do the white whale.
It has been awesome, but we have one more question. Are you dreaming of any cameras? Any white whales? Did you think about this part?
I did. I thought about this so much. So I saw, Chris, that you've got an Intrepid and you're getting your little bits and pieces as they come. And
yeah.
I really, really, really want an Intrepid 4x5, but also an 8x10. But I feel like the style that I like to make photographs in would really benefit from large format stuff. And I haven't touched that since I was like a freshman in college. And it's, you know, a totally different world. I have a lot of respect for the intensity and the determination it takes to make photographs with those tools. People are making absolutely bonkers photos with Intrepid.
Yes, agreed. Yes, yes.
I'm just like salivating over them. I'm just like, give it to me, please. So my hope is that we get a stimulus check and I'm just going to blow it on camera stuff.
That's like low key. I'm like, they're going to give me a stimulus check, but I know what I'm going to spend my money on. It's going to go to film or another camera or something.
Not groceries and rent.
No.
You know, come on.
In my mind, I'm like, should I pay down my entire credit card or should I do that?
That's what I should do.
Yeah. No, camera is just so much more fun.
There's no fun in that.
Yeah.
Don't pay rent. I was driving back from the grocery store and I was like, oh, that's the one. I do want an RF70. Do either of you have one?
No, I wish.
What is that?
It's made by
It's
Min.
A Instax wide rangefinder.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
It takes great pictures. There's a few people who are doing a lot of work just like for fun. Anthony Hands down in Australia is using that pretty frequently. He's a great knowledge resource for that camera, but I think it would be really fun to have something that's a little bit cheaper than Polaroid to kind of blow through a pack of film with, but also get a lot of sharpness and like, I love the control over a fully manual camera. That's like really dreamy to me. So maybe one day. After I spend too much money on another camera, I'll use like four times before I'm totally overwhelmed.
I'm right there with you with that one.
Well, I hope you get into large format. I would love to see what you create in that medium.
Thanks. There's the new Lomography Graphlock back for Intrepid, which is a huge incentive for me.
Yes, yes.
I think a lot of people are going to just like lose it over that. I've seen a few examples. Like Ben from In an Instant has been posting his. They're just, they're so gorgeous.
What's crazy is I feel like that was one of the reasons why I was like, I need to get into large format. like Lumography has like put me over the edge to be like not only have been like surrounded by people who are like really great at large format, but then I've got a chance to play with that and I was like, what am I doing? I need to be a part of this.
Yeah, I can't wait. I saw it got pushed back a little bit again until like July or something. So it'll get here soon. But
yeah, and it's going to be so fun.
I'm so excited.
And now I have a 4x5 now.
Yes, you do.
So excited.
You do.
Oh, man.
Did you get all your parts?
I got a lens and I got film carriers, but I want to get everything. The dark, this is my universal, like, I notice when I say dark slide, yeah. Nobody can see, but I like do a little hand flip over my head. and I got to get a loop and a shutter release I got to get. There's so many little things you got to get, but it's all been exciting, just piecing it all together, so.
Yeah, that's great.
It's such a baller-looking camera, dope. Though.
When I did the unboxing, I was like, okay. Because it's just so light and so pretty, and yeah.
Yeah, if we think Polaroids are like a conversation piece, people are going to lose their minds when they start seeing more large format people walking around in the world, and there should be more of us. More people should be like, ooh, I want to do that. And I hope that there is a lot of positive response with this incentivization of a like Instax back. Cause
yes.
I mean, it's just going to be, I have a lot of daydreams about a lot of photos and a lot of projects. And
yes.
A lot of them are in like huge form. So I'm really crossing my fingers that'll all come together in the short term and maybe not the long term.
That's almost like the best part of it all, right? Like I long-term life things. Like I can't wait to photograph my kids, you know, and like, I can't wait to like, I was talking about, somebody asked if I have any more zines in the works. And I was thinking about like, what if I did a book would be like a life goal. And now I was like, oh, I have a life goal now. Cause I said it, you know, like, and it's just not, never ending. And it's just, you know. Amazing.
Well, the cool thing is like positive manifestation, you know, like want it, you say it out loud, you give it to yourself, and I don't know what's happening in the cosmic universe, but I do think with photography, it tends to come back to us. Positive intentions, you know?
Yeah, and also like the large format thing, I kind of mentioned it in my video. It's like I put it on a pedestal for some reason. Like I was like, I can never do that. That's like for the really good people, the really professional people. And, you know, thankfully like Intrepid makes it more affordable, obviously, so that isn't the barrier, you know, but it was a barrier in my create. Like I didn't think that I deserved, I don't know. I didn't even realize I felt that way until I was like opening the box, you know?
Wow.
So there's just like any advice to anybody, open yourself up to the things you think that aren't, you know, like try it, you know?
Yes.
If it's not for you, it's not for you, but nothing is like unreachable. If I'm making any sense, guys, I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
But,
totally.
You know,
Everything's attainable. You just have to put one foot in front of the other. And it's as simple as that. Sometimes it can feel really overwhelming. I felt very similarly, Chris, about large format stuff for a long time. And then I was like, oh, that's really my own undoing. There's no reason to miss out on this really special way of capturing time. Like, film is magic, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
And
agreed.
To get something so big out of it is like... mind-bogglingly cool, and we can make that happen within ourselves. So I can't wait to see what you do. I'm so excited.
Ah, thanks. I'm like, so good. Well, do you have any other questions for Jamie, Timothy?
No.
I think this has been phenomenal. Yeah. I feel I'm the Jones in now. I'm like,
fired up.
Yes, fired up.
I know. I like want to go take pictures. It's dark out, but tomorrow.
I know. Well, where can everybody check out your work, Jamie? You have a website, Instagram, all that stuff?
I do. I have a website. It's jamieswick.com. And on Instagram, it's just at jamieswick. And next week, I'm going to load my book, if people are interested, online. And it's going to be awesome. It's like 50 photos of Polaroid in color. I'm so psyched.
Oh, that's
Let us know so we'll put the in our stories and so people can swipe up and get it.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh my God. That would be so cool. I don't use any other social media stuff, just those, but I'm on there a lot. So if anybody ever has questions, feel free to shoot me a message and I like to talk Polaroid.
Yay. Awesome. Timothy, where are you?
All right, guys. I'm on Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography-related YouTube videos. Easiest way to find it is go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Podcast on Instagram. And we have a fun Facebook group you can join and share stuff and talk to each other. We're on Clubhouse.
Yeah, we are. Every Wednesday.
We're trying to come on Clubhouse more often. So I guess we announce those, but you'll see us. Yeah. We'll be there. Come say hi. Come
we'll
talk.
Be there.
Come join our room. Yeah, that's it. Jamie, thank you again. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
Awesome. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Take care, guys.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
First off, Chris and I would like to thank Jamie for coming on the show. It's great getting to chat with you, learn about your Polaroids, how you got into photography. It was such a good time. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Jamie. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Like I said at the beginning and the middle of the show, we have a bunch of stuff over there. We started doing our Sunday, it's the third Sunday of the month, developing nights. It's a lot of fun. It's a Patreon-only exclusive. We do have a bunch of other stuff over there, so head over and check it out. Guys, that's going to be it for this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Later.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.